Engage. Out of the park.
The NSR Media Network presents Out of the Park with Barry Davis, brought to you by aglaw.ca, Foundation Physiotherapy, The Jaywalk, and Timothy's Pub. This week, we're pleased to be joined by Blue Jays legend Dwayne Ward, and like many of us, he has opinions on the Houston Astros.
You know, what is going to be the right punishment, and how many players are involved? To me, you know, that's something that, you know, stripping them of, you know, first and second round draft picks this year and next year, finding them the money, I mean, that's finding the organization. But, I mean, what about finding the players? What about suspending players that were involved with it? What about, I mean, there's so many different avenues I think you can go.
Dwayne Ward is honored to be entering the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame. And your host? Well, he wouldn't even make the Out of the Park Hall of Fame. Here he is, Barry Davis.
You know, you make one mistake, and then you get banned for life from the Out of the Park Hall of Fame. It's going to be one sad Hall of Fame without the founder being in it.
Have you ever heard the joke, right? The Scottish guy talks about how, like, he built... this person built all kinds of bridges, and they call him Simon the Bridge Builder. And then Carl over here, he built all kinds of roads, and they call him Carl the Road Builder. And then he says, but you have sex with one goat. They call you Fred the Goat Effer. Anyway.
You done?
It's Out of the Park.
Hi.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Another person that will not make it into the Out of the Park Hall of Fame.
I'm in the Hall of Shame.
The Hall of Shame is going to be much busier than the Hall of Fame, folks, when it comes time to buying tickets.
Hey, listen, who would be in charge of the Hall of Shame as far as president? Got to be Trump, right?
The Hall of Shame?
Yeah.
Of the world?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
I mean, he
That'd
is.
That'd be a party. Yeah. He'd bring Melania with him. She'd look confused.
Harvey Weinstein will be there.
Oh, that guy's. Yeah. Dude, that guy's got a whole wing in the Hall of Shame.
Mm-hmm. All right. Are you ready to talk about today's show?
Yeah, this is about today's show.
Okay. All right. Dwayne Ward is going to join us. He of the latest nominees heading into the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame, which will happen this summer in Marystown. Yep. St. Mary's. I don't know why I always call it Marystown. St. Marystown.
Yep.
How about that? St. Mary's. Yes, yeah. That's where he's going. The Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame.
Can females be saints?
I don't know. Congratulations to... Why can't they be?
I don't know. I just...
Mother Teresa.
But that's not a saint, though.
She's a saint.
That's a mother.
Yeah, she's a saint. Squirrel?
You started that one. That was not me.
Dwayne Ward will be on the program this week, going into the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame in St. Mary's.
Sorry, Dwayne.
Yes. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about his time with the Toronto Blue Jays. And we'll find out what he thinks about Cheatgate 2017.
I know, I've talked to Dwayne Ward a lot. I like Dwayne Ward.
Dwayne Ward's a lot of fun.
Straight shooter, man.
He basically says it as it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And freaking facial hair is on point.
Exactly.
Always on point.
All right. We will also have Ask Barry Davis. We'll have the results of our fair or foul poll. And up next, we are going to grade one of the Toronto Blue Jays catchers. Not on their abilities in the parking lot of a Dollar Tree. Not about hitting a baseball or squatting behind the plate, but being behind the kit. That is up next. There's Matt and Barry. You're listening to OTP.
Ladies and gentlemen, girls and boys, the first pitch with Barry Davis.
The first pitch is brought to you by the Jaywalk. Julie and company saw an ad this week for the Jaywalk fanny pack.
I love it.
Fanny packs are coming back in, folks.
They're in, baby.
Are they?
They're all the way.
They're in.
Dude, I have students walking in with them.
Really?
All the time.
You know who I give some credit to?
You.
Well, no.
Oh.
If, you know, spandex pants on men come back in, then I'll take credit.
All right.
No, The Rock in the movie Central Intelligence.
Okay.
Have you not seen that movie?
I have, and I love.
And he wears the fanny pack, and he talks about the fanny pack.
Fanny.
Right? Maybe he brought it back. But you can get a fanny pack now from the Jaywalk. Also, we're getting close, I would think, to the reveal of the 2020 T-shirt collection.
Oh, yeah.
For this year.
Come on. Powder Blues, baby. Bring it.
Maybe.
Bring the Powder
Blues.
Now,
they've had shirts on Powder Blue.
Yeah, but now you got... Powder blue uniforms.
Yeah. Right? So?
Right.
So they'll continue to make shirts in powder blue?
Because I'm blue. Ba-ba-dee-da-ba-da-da-da-da.
Okay.
Right?
I do want to talk about music this segment, but we'll get to that. Actually, you know what? It's kind of in the same vein of what I want to talk about.
All right.
So you probably have seen it by now, and if you're watching the video, you can see it right now. Caleb Joseph entertaining the troops during spring training, sitting behind a makeshift drum kit that was made of what, plastic garbage bins?
Yeah, it looks to be a tripod for a camera or yes. something. He's
just wanted to make it clear, these were not officially licensed Houston Astro trash cans. These were, they had nothing to do with it.
And Caleb may have had a metronome taped to his upper right hand shoulder.
Really?
To help him keep time. A la buzzer or something.
You think, oh, I see what you're saying.
But he won't take his jersey off to show you.
Right.
Right.
Okay, we will get into the whole, how does Caleb Joseph look as far as drumming technique goes.
Okay.
But I got to tell you what, there's been some talk that the Jays could possibly carry three catchers this year.
That's, honestly, that's preposterous.
Possibly. It is known to have happened early in the season before. It also is more common in the National League. However, Caleb Joseph, think about this, Matt. The 26th man on the roster. Now we have a 26-man roster.
Yep.
It's not going to play a lot.
No.
But Caleb Joseph can offer something into the clubhouse, in the dugout. And I think what we saw with that video was the fact that he could be a damn good leader. He can help motivate the troops. And he can also help bring a little levity to when things are not going well.
He could be like the Caucasian version of Munenori Kawasaki, man.
Possibly.
Just bring this guy. You know
but
what?
The difference is Caleb Joseph has had some decent numbers. I mean, not great, but he he's an experienced catcher. To me, this is the type of guy that you would expect as a backup catcher.
Yep.
Right? Reese McGuire and Danny Jansen are both young potential number one catchers. So to me, I think that if Caleb Joseph has a good spring, if Caleb Joseph can prove that he can, you know, keep up on the field, then I think what he brings off the field would make him a phenomenal backup catcher and also allow the Blue Jays the possibility of trading one of their young catchers.
Okay. Well,
and getting something pretty decent in return.
My thought is Reese McGuire might come out of spring training a little slow. Right?
Why? Because he might need a little bit of
There's a bit of a pall cast over.
I see. I'm curious to know what it's been like there for him because it's been very quiet.
But it's been very quiet there.
Yeah.
You bring him up here, not so quiet.
But what are people saying about him?
I don't know.
Most people are laughing at him.
Yeah.
I don't think people are looking at him like a Roberto Osuna.
No.
Right?
No. He was getting it on with himself. But
right.
The point is, though, is that this is something. Look, he's a young kid.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably heavily embarrassed. There's going to be some manner of punishment by the club because they have to. They have to do something.
Why?
Because they have to. They have to assert their authority.
Yeah, but
right?
Why not let the law do it?
I get it. But how often does the law do it? And then the club also says, hey, by the way.
Depending on what it is.
He was masturbating in a freaking dollar store
again,
parking lot.
This is completely unprecedented. We had Brian Drolleman on The Spin.
What did he have to say about it?
Because
Brian's a dirtbag. I love it.
He literally said for the first time in my life, he goes, I'm at a loss. I don't know what to say. Because I've never heard of anything like this before. Forget baseball. Just anybody doing that. Again,
he must have really had to tug one out. Like he just could not wait to get back to the hotel.
The actual act of doing it is not unhealthy and it's not uncommon.
No.
Doing it during the day in the parking lot of a Dollar Tree with no tinting in your cars, that's where it gets a little bit what?
Yeah.
Right? And he's not going to talk about it. They're going to have the day in court and we'll see how the court thing turns out.
Yeah.
But as of now, it's, you know, back to business as usual. Now, yes. I have not heard any quotes from him. I don't know if he's not talking to the media.
A gag order.
About that, but I mean, could you not ask him questions regarding baseball?
They Yeah, well, somebody came out and said that he's not going to answer any questions regarding the incident until they've had their day at court, until...
Sure, and that makes sense.
Which I completely get, because you're putting yourself in a position to incriminate yourself.
Well, he already did that in the car.
Yes, he did. Caleb Joseph.
Yes,
Caleb Joseph.
I think Caleb Joseph would make a great guy on this team. I think he's got some great leadership qualities. And enough can't be said about having a teammate like that in the clubhouse, especially when you got a lot of young guys. Just being able to just... Did you see that in the video, everyone was staring at him?
Yeah,
they were clapping along.
I have it called up here, and you see Anthony Alford in the background, and all you see with Anthony Alford is the hugest smile and the whitest teeth.
He always has that. Yeah.
The teeth are just the whitest teeth ever.
He's got beautiful teeth.
He's got beautiful everything.
Here's the thing. I would say the majority of the kids on the Blue Jays didn't know any of the songs that Caleb Joseph was playing.
If you jumping know, to
Don't Stop Believin'.
Yeah.
I guess everybody knows Don't Stop Believin' now, right?
The Sopranos did that, man.
Okay.
Right.
And so did Glee.
And so did Glee.
So I guess the, but yeah. Tom Sawyer.
I don't know,
especially
man.
Especially if you're
Tom
not Canadian.
Tom Sawyer, I don't know.
Young people, I don't know.
That might be one of those tracks, though. That might be a DNA track where it's built in.
Right.
Think about this, right? Think about a song like, let's talk about a DNA track. A track that it doesn't matter how old you are, you've heard this song.
Who Are You by The Who? Just because it's you hear
yeah,
it, you know.
That would be one. That would definitely be one. Okay. Let It Be by the Beatles. That's a DNA track, man.
Okay, I suppose.
It's built in.
It's hard for me to say because I'm a Beatles fan. I don't know if a non-Beatles fan would go, oh, yeah, I know that song. We should ask Devin Travis. You know?
He doesn't have DNA tracks.
No.
They don't have those in Florida.
But I, like a Sweet Home Alabama.
Yep. That okay. would be one. That's exactly what I'm talking about,
yeah.
right? Respect, Aretha Franklin. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that yes. song.
You know, I was listening to, you know, we'll get to that in a moment. We'll get to that in a moment. You know, I'm going to say it now.
Okay.
Just while we're on the topic.
Business on air.
You mentioned Aretha Franklin.
Yeah.
And, you know, there have been a lot of talk recently about, you know, why J-Lo and Shakira played the halftime show. And they did. I think they did a great job. But the bottom line is, I was flipping in the car listening to Howard Stern. Haven't heard listen to Howard Stern in a long time because I don't have
Sirius. XM.
My wife does.
Okay.
So I'm in her car. I'm listening to it. And I guess it was a show that had taken place the day after the Super Bowl. And they were talking about it. And, you know, they mentioned, listen, I have nothing against either one of them, but it was lip syncing. It wasn't really the true meaning of what a concert should be, right? And like, well, who's left to do it? And somebody said, why not get Stevie Wonder or someone like that? Can you imagine Stevie Wonder doing that?
Stevie Wonder would have to lip sync.
Why?
You're required to.
No, you're not.
Yes, you are.
No, you're not.
Yes, you are.
Oh, yeah? Show
you
me where it says that.
Required that.
Tom Petty did not lip sync.
Okay.
Bruce Springsteen did not lip sync. Paul McCartney did not lip sync.
They want to have complete and utter control.
Hey, are you making this up or do you have some facts to back this up?
It's part of what they do. And the reason why they do it, the reason why they do it with the Super Bowl is they want to have complete control over sound. Because you don't know what you're dealing with regards to wind, with regards to whatever.
I call poppycock.
All right. Call poppycock. And how do you know that Tom Petty didn't lip sync?
Oh, come on. Did you watch it?
I did.
You can tell.
Okay.
Come on. You know when someone's lip syncing.
If you are going to force the Chili Peppers to not play their instruments, why would they volunteer for that? Why?
How do you know the Chili Peppers
Because
didn't
do he it? Wasn't even plugged in and there was no pack. He came out afterwards and said, we weren't even plugged in or playing.
That's the Chili Peppers. That's their option.
It's the Chili Peppers.
Yeah, I would think
conceivably the best modern rhythm section on earth.
My thinking, Matt, is that the musicians are given the option. If you prefer to lip sync, we can definitely arrange that, but you don't have to.
And for Shakira to lip sync, she can sing.
Yeah,
she can completely sing.
It's not about
sing.
That. But the point I think Howard Stern was trying to make is it was more about the show and the production rather than the actual music.
The problem with the Super Bowl halftime show is they don't know how... Okay. There's not a definite market that you can appeal to.
No.
Think about it like this, right? So you go and you put Shakira and J-Lo up there. The NFL, they know that they've got the people that know who those artists are. They have that market. They have them.
Do they?
Absolutely.
Kids?
Well, no, but guys that were watching Shakira and J-Lo, say 15 years ago when they were at the height of their powers.
I could easily say the majority of people at the Super Bowl or watching the Super Bowl would love to hear a country artist.
Okay, fine. Pick a country artist. Who?
Travis Tritt.
Okay.
Or somebody probably more...
Wonderful.
More...
The problem is they have to find an artist that they think that would appeal to a wide cross-section. It's really tough.
What's the guy?
Now, the one year they had Maroon 5 and Travis Scott,
yeah,
not a good mix.
I don't even know who Travis Scott
is. It's a rap guy. But, okay. But the point is that it's so hard. Bruce Springsteen written a lot of DNA tracks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know Born in the USA.
Right.
Even if you're born in Nunavut.
You see, that's why I thought Stevie Wonder would be great.
I completely agree. Stevie Wonder would be a wonderful,
and this
wonderful
whole
choice.
Argument was that you said he would have to lip sync.
I probably would.
Okay, I don't believe you. Anyhow, Caleb Joseph.
Yeah.
I want to ask
you. How you doing?
I want to ask your opinion as a drummer.
Yep.
What'd you think of the form?
He's got to have played Kit at some point.
Yeah.
Because this is not
an air drummer.
No. And just, you see him, he turns and he goes to hit the hi-hat and just the grip on whatever thing he's using as his stick. It's like, bro, you've held a stick before.
He has the right grip.
Yeah.
His form is good. He has very good dexterity by the looks of it, right?
Yep. Yeah. He's very, very similar to Reese McGuire. The grip is good. And
wow.
Oh.
That's nasty what you're saying.
Yeah. But no, he clearly has played these songs before.
Mm-hmm.
And air drums for me is one of the only instruments that really, really translates well. Like air guitar looks okay. But man, if you see a person air drumming, it's all kinds of body movement.
Yeah.
That's the epitome of translation.
Or the epitome.
There you go. Of translation onto an air instrument, right?
It's funny because on Family Day, they were replaying some of the older episodes of The Spin, and it was our conversation with Gino Vannelli, and we were talking about instruments that you can air to in the car.
Yeah.
And people talk about air drumming. He's like, there's no way you can't air drum in the car.
No.
Because...
Not safe.
You're going to be touching the gas and the brake and the... Not good.
Safe at all.
Not good.
No.
But so for me, I do a lot of air piano.
Really?
Oh, air keyboards. Cause, yeah, bang on the steering wheel, you know.
And
it's almost in a way, it's kind of like percussion-y.
And the nice part, too, is that when you're playing air anything, you're never playing a wrong note.
True.
You're freaking the best,
You
man.
Are the best.
Listen,
you're never out of tune.
Do you want to hear an interesting little story about the air stuff? Is that when those games Rock Band and Guitar Hero were huge?
Yeah.
The number of students that I had come in, but like, listen, man, you don't understand, okay? Like
your students talk like that?
This is my voice.
Very homophobic of
you. No. I am awesome at Guitar Hero on the drums. You just wait, right? So you put them on a drum set and they're like, dude, awful. Awful, awful.
Of course.
It's a whole other animal.
It's not the same.
No. It is not the same.
No.
Right? And I would say probably 50% of those students stayed on, but 50% were like, nope, can't do this.
Here's the interesting thing though. If you are a drummer or you are a guitar player, you're going to be better at Guitar Hero or Rock Band.
Okay, it's interesting because I played those games.
Yeah,
and the pedals don't react right.
Oh, poor guy.
You're like,
guy.
Come on, man, this isn't supposed to react.
Have you ever played a gig where like they've got a drum set and it's like not set up?
Oh, God.
Yeah? Okay.
Oh, God. Oh,
okay, while we're on the topic of music, you've got a little bone of contention that you want to pick with me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, this revolves around a poll that we had.
Around you being a goof.
On our show on Thursday. And the reason we had this poll is we were joined by the drummer, the former drummer from the Black Crowes. He ain't in the band anymore. He didn't want to have anything to do with the band anymore.
Well, nobody wants to have anything to do with the band anymore.
It's literally the two brothers and nobody else from the band.
What?
The two
really?
Guys that don't get along are now on this tour with four other musicians.
They need money.
Yes.
Is what it is.
So we asked... In light of that, because Shake Your Moneymaker was arguably my favorite album from that era. Love that album. So we asked what the best rock album was from the 90s. Now, we didn't want hip-hop or any other rock album.
Right.
So Shake Your Moneymaker, Jagged Little Pill, Nevermind, and then name your other. And you were calling me all kinds of names when you came here.
Yeah. Okay. The fact that the Black Album by Metallica is not on that list.
It's okay.
The fact that Pearl Jam's 10.
Now, Matthew, you do polls all the time.
Yes.
Right? You know that we cannot give seven choices.
I agree.
Okay?
Take Shake Your Moneymaker off.
No.
The Black Album. The Black Album.
Okay.
The most influential hard rock album probably of a 10-year period. It sold 16 million copies worldwide.
You understand, the Glorious Sons would not be around if it were not for the Black Crowes.
Do you want to have the list of artists that would not be around if not for Metallica?
Yes, go ahead, start.
Start naming any band that's popular right now, like the Glorious Sons.
I don't think Metallica. If Metallica's Absolutely. Black Album.
Go and ask them.
No.
That was the most. Dude, come on.
Dude, I asked them.
16 million copies.
The Rolling Stones and anything by the Rolling Stones and Shake Your Moneymaker.
That's they toured what for they 2.5 years
hey,
on that album.
There are.
It's as big as Nevermind.
Maybe it was.
It's as big as Nevermind.
Okay. Whatever. You know, it's funny because we've had many people offer their comments.
Right.
Right? And we have Pearl Jam 10 votes there. We have Red Hot Chili Peppers. We have another one for 10 by Pearl Jam. Another one, 10 Pearl Jam.
Yeah.
Right? We got STP, the Purple Album. We've got Melancholy and the...
Ugh.
You're not a big fan of them?
Eh.
That was our pal Tom Forth. We did that.
I'll have a chat with
Tom. Yeah. We have Actoon Baby from U2. What's Angel Dust?
I don't know.
Okay. We got a lot of votes.
Actoon Baby's a good one. I'm just saying, man.
But we only have... We got one for Definitely Maybe by Oasis. Good one. And What's the Story More in Glory? That's another one. Alice in Chains, Dirt. Only have two people that have listed the Black Album. So, Matthew?
Yes.
Your theory sucks.
Now, never mind. As of... The night of recording.
What do you mean,
here,
never mind?
Never mind.
Never mind the album?
The album, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Is winning, and it should.
Yeah.
It should. Yeah. That's a freaking ridiculous album.
We can't argue on that. Although, I will say, you know, maybe it's a Canadian bias on my part, but my God, Jagged Little Pill was a great album.
You know what I think the problem with Jagged Little Pill is, and you know what, I'm probably even going to shoot myself in the foot because Nevermind was as omnipresent, but dude... For a damn year, you could not turn on the radio without hearing something from Jagged Little Pill.
Of course.
It was insane.
And you heard it on the alt-rock stations?
Yep.
The
yes,
rock
you did.
Stations, the pop stations, the dance stations, the alternative stations, the indie stations.
Where were the CRTC when she was talking about going down on somebody in a theater? How did that make it through?
Well,
I think
maybe they didn't hear that line, but they did bleep. There was a bleep when you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was
but,
bleep.
But, I mean, go down on you in a theater. You can't misinterpret that as anything else other than what it is.
Do you know when The Who first put out Who Are You, right?
Yeah.
Radio stations didn't even notice.
Are you?
Yeah. It's funny. But when you we're doing what, our member show, you're just foul mouth and now you're bleeping yourself.
Hold up a second. If I say the F-E-F-E,
yeah.
I usually throw the thing
okay.
up, right? But-
The middle finger?
But you know what, though, too? Even without that, even without the Who thing altered, it doesn't really sound like he's saying that. He's saying it stylistically enough that you're like, is he saying the F word? I'm not sure if he's saying the F word.
He does.
Oh, no, totally does. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
But it's interesting.
Love that tune, man. Holy jeez.
But there were songs that were banned back in the day because of what they thought were references to.
Everything was banned in Boston. Remember that saying? Banned in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Boston was no fun.
No.
It was not fun living in Boston.
All right. Are we done talking?
Did we talk about anything today here?
Did
we talk about
something? We did some stuff.
All right.
Caleb Joseph, music.
Some stuff. Yeah. We did some stuff.
Yeah.
We got more music talk on the other side, you know.
There's questions that are music related.
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking forward to that.
We're going to get really heated about this.
All right. And still to come, part one with former Toronto Blue Jay and one of the newest members of the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame, Dwayne Ward. There's Matt. I'm Barry. You're listening to Out of the Park.
Out of the Park presents Ask Barry Davis.
Uh-oh. Now you're going to have to bleep it. Oh, no, you don't.
Now.
I'm going to make the call. You are not going to bleep it.
Everybody knows this song.
Right. And they don't bleep it on the radio anymore. It's funny. They bleep some things on the radio.
God, it's just so cool.
Yes.
What is that? What? It's so cool, man.
That's a keyboard. It's a synthesizer.
But it's got like a
it's a Moog synthesizer
thing or something
it's
on
just
it. Right?
The different sounds.
So cool,
you know?
Man. Yeah, they're such a great band.
Iconic song. Even if you don't know the Who. You know that.
That's a DNA track.
Yes.
Absolutely it is.
Ask Barry Davis is brought to you by SeatGiant.ca. And folks, you may have heard some things going on about different services out there that broker tickets.
Yep.
Right? They're doing bad things. SeatGiant.ca is doing nothing but good things, folks. You will have no hidden charges. You'll be able to buy all your tickets in Canadian money. And you can buy your tickets to any type of event you want to go to, whether it's...
How about The Who?
Well, it might be their final tour coming soon.
Haven't they been final touring it for 120 years?
Was their first final.
There you go.
Their first final show. Live from Maple Leaf Gardens in Toronto and live broadcast on, it was either CBC or Global.
Have you, speaking of final tours, have you seen the footage of David Lee Roth?
Yeah, I don't.
Oh,
yeah.
My good God.
Listen, David Lee Roth never could sing.
Holy God.
But what he did, what he's doing now in Vegas, I can't believe he has a residency there. He must have paid somebody off for that.
It is just.
Dude's awful.
You know what, man? Seriously, if you need a good laugh,
yeah,
you got to just watch that footage.
I know.
It is just unbelievable.
Yes.
Big fan.
We are not going to subject you to that here on the program.
Easy to find it, though.
Right. SeatGiant.ca. Use the promo code NSRmedia at checkout. Almost forgot that. Very important.
No caps, no spaces.
Don't matter.
All small. It does because my parents bought Raptors tickets.
Oh, there you go.
Right.
So they sold their. They saved a little money.
They sold their soul to the devil.
They sold their soul to the devil to see the Raptors.
That's it.
Okay. So ask Barry Davis.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. That's you. I'm going to ask you some stuff. That's why it's called this. NSRmedia.ca. Click on the Ask Barry Davis tab at the top. Directs you how to do it. If you're more comfortable on Twitter, that's okay. Stay there. Kick your feet up. Use the Ask Barry Davis hashtag. You can also
as long as you're not driving.
As long as you're not driving. Right. You can't air drum or kick your feet up while driving. Okay? Otherwise, you can just DM me at @Matt_NSR. Great first question. Not sure why this whole thing turned into some manner of music. Podcast, show, whatever, but this is a fantastic one. You cannot look. No Google, no nothing. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's a big, grand debate that happened earlier in the week. And Melissa Flick, one of our longtime loyal listeners.
Melissa's great.
She's great. She said, hey guys, you want to discuss this challenge on Twitter or for the show? Check it out. Top four guitarists on your Mount Rushmore of guitarists of all time.
Oh boy.
Go.
I mean, there's so many different
this is the
genres
problem.
Of music.
Now I'm seeing people's lists here. For instance, this
No, don't tell me anybody's list first.
Okay.
Because then you're gonna
but
give
there's
me ideas.
Names on this list. I'm like, are you an ass clown that you forgot this guy? Like, come on, there are four guys out there.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I would put one of the early guitar greats, right?
Like
a Chuck Berry or a B.B. King or somebody like
thank
that.
Thank you. Yes, you do have to do that.
Right.
Yes.
So I'm going to say for my liking, I'm going to go with Chuck Berry.
Okay.
I'll put Chuck Berry on there.
Love
for
it.
Sure.
Good job.
I think then you've got to think of something from, you know, the 60s or 70s, somebody that really inspired a generation of guitarists and may have gotten guitarists to kind of go, oh, here's a new way of playing. So I'm going to take Eric Clapton as
dude,
number two.
You're just great choices.
Thank you.
Great choices.
Okay, thank you. Now we're going to go a little bit more modern and kind of like a 70s into the 80s kind of rock and roll genre of music. So now, I mean, there are a few that you can look at, obviously, right? You can, you know, Jimi Hendrix was there too, and that's a tough one as well, but he wasn't there long enough to really show what he could do. And I think Randy Rhoads was a magician too, but again, we didn't know how good he could be. And I don't think he was around long enough to get the Mount Rushmore look.
Okay.
I really think you got to put Eddie Van Halen there only because what so many guitarists are doing now is copying what Eddie wrote.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Eddie was so incredible at what he did. And I don't think this list could be complete without Slash on it.
Okay.
So those are my four.
Okay. Either you and I came from the same womb or we have a telepathic connection.
Could there be an option three?
The option three would be you just know your stuff.
Oh, okay.
Let's not pick that option. Nobody wants that option.
Okay.
All right.
Why? Who's on your list?
Okay. I literally did the exact same thing that you did. I came down, I did the old guys. It came down to either Chuck Berry or B.B. King. Mm-hmm. And I went B.B. King okay. just because he influenced all that bluesy jazz
sure
stuff.
He did. Yep.
That's just, and again, a whole thing, right? Totally.
Could have been either one.
Roll the dice, right? Yeah. I then went with Jimi Hendrix. And you're right, he wasn't around a long time, but the mark that that guy yep. left, right?
No doubt
in
about it.
In an era where everybody started to play fast, he was the other way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And then, on the flip side of the coin, Eddie Van Halen.
Mm-hmm.
Because that guy influenced like 10 years of guitarists, and even forget that, yeah. even now.
Mm-hmm.
Think about guys like Enwe Malmsteen, all those guys.
Yeah.
They were all playing like Eddie Van Halen.
Sure they were, yep.
And then I went Slash.
Of course.
Dude, that's frightening. We basically, outside of B.B. King, like we had minimum 60%, because you even mentioned Jimi Hendrix.
Yes. We and I mentioned, B.B. King, I mentioned as well. I mentioned everybody that's on your list, I mentioned as possibilities.
And the only reason why I went with those, now, here's the thing. Slash and Jimi Hendrix, that's a direct tether. Like, you close your eyes and that Slash sounds like Hendrix.
Yeah, in some
he
ways.
Sounds like it's...
And maybe he was what Hendrix could have eventually...
He would have evolved into.
Right.
Right? But just those long, sweeping notes, mm-hmm.
Just
solos...
It was just singable. Make the guitar sing.
Yeah. There's a guy there, and I tell my students this. You hear the solo in November Rain
yes.
once, and you know it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't even matter if you play guitar.
Even the intro for Sweet Child of Mine, I mean, that is pure Slash gold.
The greatest... Okay, my God... Out of the Park today is brought to you by The Stage, because that's all we're talking about today is music, which I love. Here's the thing. Go and can we, when we come into Wardo,
mm-hmm.
can we throw Mr. Brownstone up there?
I thought you wanted to hear the guitar solo from November Rain.
That too. But they should have hung on the intro, the first part of the intro for Mr. Brownstone longer. They jumped too quick. That
okay, yeah, that's enough.
Okay.
I think you held on to it a little bit too
long. They should have done one more pass on that. That is utter brilliantly great.
Okay.
Right? And then, of course, Eddie Van Halen. I mean, God, and take Eruption out of it, but just listen to any number of solos that guy mm-hmm. ripped out, or even melody lines, like When Love Walks In.
Yep.
It's just unbelievable, mm-hmm. man. It's a shame that band has become what they've become.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. I love the, right?
No, Sammy should still be singing with that band.
I could not agree more.
Michael Anthony should still be playing bass in that band.
I also could not agree more.
Mm-hmm. All right. Do we have any other questions?
We do. We do. Okay. This comes from Fernando Latrell. I can't say that properly. And he says, all leagues cheat. It's a fact. What say you?
Yeah. Yep. I mean.
Everybody cheats.
There is a lot of, but there's a difference between, and I've said this before, there's a difference between a player on second base reading the pitcher and the catcher and letting his teammates know what's going on and hiring somebody using electronics and having trash cans and all that stuff. There's the big difference, right? If it's a player within the game picking something up, that's one thing. If it's somebody that's not a part of the game that's relaying the information, that's when it becomes cheating.
Why hasn't it come out with the Boston Red Sox yet?
Well, hopefully by the time people are listening to this, it has. But that's been the mystery, right? This was supposed to have happened before spring training.
There's no mystery.
No, you're right. I don't think I think Major League Baseball definitely knows what happened.
Right.
And I think they have found some very incriminating facts.
Yeah.
And there's no way, after everything that's happened with the Houston Astros, they want to let that information out now. So they might wait till the end of the season and say, nope. Oh, yeah, by the way, Boston Red Sox. Or they may just let it go.
Nope.
You think they're just going to let it go?
Absolutely.
Because they can't take another hit.
Nope. That's not it at all.
Oh, are you going to tell me because it's the Boston Red Sox?
That's exactly what
no,
it is.
No, BS. If it was any other team, they'd be handling it this exact same way.
Why hasn't it come out with the Red Sox yet?
I just told you why.
Why?
Because Major League Baseball is barely surviving the hit from the Houston Astros. If they get another one, then Major League Baseball may as well just pack it up and say, you know what, screw it, we're not going to play this year.
They were conducting those interviews simultaneously.
I know.
Why did they bring out the Astros first?
I think because that was where it originated.
Okay.
That's where it began. That went back to 2017.
Where there's smoke, there's fire, man. I'm telling you, they're not bringing it out with the Red Sox because they're the crown jewel or one of the crown jewels of the MLB.
By the way,
If it's the Yankees that did it, mm-hmm. Okay. Alex Rodriguez clearly taking steroids.
Yeah, he was.
He was what?
No, he wasn't.
Because he wasn't.
It wasn't proven until.
It was the Yankees. Yeah. That's why.
No, I don't buy it. I don't buy it.
The Houston Astros are an easy target.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, that's why it came out with them.
Yeah, whatever. They cheated.
Listen.
By the way.
All leagues cheat, by the way.
I have a new idea for a punishment. This.
By the way, I love this. The number of listeners that have been DMing me that were like, guys, you should play this game all season long.
Yeah. So here's my idea, okay? We know that you can't suspend the players, you can't fine the players, you can't do anything, right? Like that. Because they were given immunity. But here's what you can do. Now, it won't affect any players that were involved that are no longer with Houston. It will affect the Houston Astros, but this will hit the players hard. No matter how well your team does this year, no matter where you finish in the standings this year, you are excluded from the postseason.
Oh.
You will. There is no chance for you guys to be in the postseason this year. Boom. Because you can't, stripping the World Series, whatever. No. If they think they won the World Series,
according to Rob Manfred, it doesn't matter.
It's just a piece of tin.
It's just a piece of metal.
Oh, and he apologized for that the next day.
Oh, he probably went back to his office and his handlers were like, dude, this is your trophy.
Yeah.
In your league.
Yeah.
You're an idiot.
Well, he's already an idiot, Matt. You know that.
Right.
He's already caused enough crap in this league, showing that he's one of the most incompetent.
He didn't have a choice, man. He didn't have a choice.
He cut the deal.
He did. Deal with it. Carla Homolka.
Stop bringing that up. All right. So that's my idea. No,
I think it's a good one.
No playoffs.
It's also not, come on, it's not nearly lunatic enough, though.
No, it's not. But
You got to get into something that's just like, this is so preposterous, right?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Like,
have the two women that were behind home plate flashing,
mm-hmm.
You put them in the batter's eye every time. A Houston Astro is at the plate.
There you go.
Is that more ludicrous?
The other team
gets just flash and boom.
The other team gets to play hot penny. You ever played hot penny?
No.
Hot penny is where you heat up a penny with a lighter, mm-hmm. and then you take an elastic and you whip it at people.
Ooh.
And when it hits them, it's hot. So the other team gets to just when the Astros are up to bat, they just get to be flicking hot.
I like that idea.
Them.
How about this? If you're
How about this?
if you're a right-handed batter, you must take half your at-bats left-handed and vice versa. If you're a switch hitter, you just can't play.
What about if you turn the bat the other way?
Switch hitters, you just can't play.
So you got the hand. Turn the bat the other way.
That's a good one, too.
Yep. See?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're hitting dingers off of the bat the other way, you can have it. You can have the dinger. Then again, they're going to hit dingers the whole time because they know what's coming because
mm-hmm.
they're dirty cheaters with hot penny marks all over themselves.
They have to wear leg weights.
There you go.
Imagine running to first base.
Yeah.
You're going to be... It's a base hit. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
He's being thrown out. That ball went all the way to the wall. He's being thrown out at first.
When you are up to bat, the home plate ump has a taser, and they're tasering you the whole time.
No, that's just stupid.
Okay. That's the one that...
All right. Thank you for all of your questions, folks. We will obviously expect more questions next week.
We will. We will reconvene on this subject next week.
More questions, less Matt. That is where we want to go.
Agreed.
All right. Still to come. Dwayne Ward in our Fair or Foul poll. There is Matt. I'm Barry. You're listening to Out of the Park.
And now, In the Dugout with Barry Davis.
I can sing without 11.
Hey, we are listening to this. To hear this guitar, not to hear you sing, right? And I kind of agree what you say about the beginning of the song.
They should have gone longer
on
that.
A little bit longer.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
Mm-hmm. All right, folks.
Can you believe that this album sat on the shelves for basically a year? Nobody paid attention to it?
Nope. No, I remember it was like 1990 and everybody was acting like this was a new album. And then we heard like, no, it came out in 89. What? Like 88, late 88.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
And the record company, I remember them saying that the guys at Geffen were like, I don't understand. I'm at a loss. I don't get it.
It just wasn't the right time when it first came out.
And what did they lead with? Did they lead with Welcome to the Jungle?
Yeah, that was the first single.
But then Paradise City was the one that just caught fire.
No. Sweet Child of Mine was the second single.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, great song too. Mm-hmm. But just...
And then Paradise City. I mean, there was...
It just caught fire.
Yeah. I mean, you could technically almost call this an album of the 90s as well because it was, you know, it crossed over well into the 90s. And I think it was a big... inspiration for many bands in the 90s.
Holy. Yeah, man.
Right?
Jeez.
All right.
What an album.
Mm-hmm. All right. It is time for In the Dugout. It's brought to you by Timothy's Pub on Brown's Line. And lots of great music there each and every day, except for one day. They're there like, you know, 6 days a week for live music. Not going to get that in very many places. Plus, you also get to see Marshall Dane at least once a month. He'll be there in March on the 3rd. And let's see. Oh, they've got a Fleetwood Mac tribute coming on March the 13th called Fleetwood Mac Mania. Never heard of them before, so I'm looking forward to seeing what they could do. It's not easy to be a Fleetwood Mac tribute band.
Because they never stop thinking about tomorrow.
Oh, very clever. Very clever. They've got great wings. They've got great burgers. Their fries are home cut. And you can even eat a chip butty.
Yes.
Right? By the way, speaking of a chip butty, Burger King in New Zealand just came out with one. And they're claiming like this is their brilliant idea. And people in England are laughing, going, what the hell?
Yeah, but isn't that whole area just a British colony anyway?
You'd think, yes.
So like at some point, some Brit's like, yo.
Oh, of course.
You weird Aussie. Check this out. But
we're talking about Burger King now.
Right.
Right. Timothy's Pub, Brown's Line. Check them out. Live music 6 nights a week. Okay. This was a great honor to be on the show with you, Matt.
Oh.
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, Gordo.
Yeah. we've had Dwayne Ward on this show several times. He is such a fun guy to talk to. He's never short of an opinion. But unlike most times we have him on, the main reason we wanted to talk to him wasn't because of anything controversial. It wasn't to get his take on something crazy going on or how baseball has changed. No, we wanted to talk to him about the honor of being selected as one of the newest members of the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame. Well, first of all, Mr. Ward, we'd like to congratulate you on finally, and I mean finally, getting your day at the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame. Now, we kind of joke, but Wardo, this has meant a lot to you for a long time, hasn't it?
Well, you know what? I think it's quite an honor, first and foremost. And to be even considered to get into the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame, that to me is it's a highlight. It definitely is.
Dwayne, is there any truth to the rumor that you and John Olerud colluded? You guys were like, listen, if we're going in, we're going in together. Otherwise, we're not going in at all.
No, I was as surprised to hear, you know, who was going in this year, you know, as much as I was. And, you know, it's great to have John there and also Justin Morneau. I mean, two great ball players. So, I mean, it's pretty dang good company.
Is there any truth to the rumor that before you found out, somebody banged a garbage can so you knew that you were getting in?
I'll tell you what. You know what? That's just, it just seems to be getting worse and worse over in Houston. And, you know, it's something that should have never happened. But you know what? I don't have to worry about it anymore because I'm not playing anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I mean, when you pitch, Wardo, if somebody was getting your signs, you're probably thinking, okay, I'm tipping my pitches. You know, there's no way that people are using, well, they didn't have the technology. Not to say you're old, but they didn't have the technology back then.
I think he's saying that you're old, Dwayne. That's what.
But seriously, I mean, it would be your responsibility, but this is completely different. Like, this is not about a pitcher tipping. This is about someone literally going out and cheating.
Yeah, I mean, well, the thing is that, you know, everybody's always trying to find an edge. You know, is the pitcher tipping his pitches? You know, if he is, then, you let your teammates know it. You know, if you catch a guy that's on first base, you know, and he's a pretty good base runner, you know, what's his tendencies to, you know, before he takes off and tries to steal second base? I mean, everybody's always looking for that little edge, but they all did it by eye. And like you said, we had, you know, we didn't have the technology that they have today to do the stuff that they're, you know, that they're doing. And if a guy was on second base trying to relay signs into the hitter, you know, you took care of it yourself. You basically looked at the guy at second base and said, I'm not going to hit him. I'm going to hit you when you come up. And so, you know, you kind of, I guess you try to police it yourself.
But Dwayne, what do they do? Like, let's say you were in charge of all of this. What do they do? What do they do to the Houston Astros? Oh, because, like, if it's me, I'm stripping draft picks. I'm stripping, like, Barry and I had a segment on our on a previous show about all the hypothetical craziness, you know, talking about putting their batters up to the plate blindfolded.
I like that
or
one.
Or just, you know, having them go up no cleats. But if they don't get on this now, if the punishment is lackadaisical, this is going to continue.
Well, probably all, that's well, the other.
I mean, how do you know what is going to be the right punishment, and how many players are involved? To me, you know, that's something that, you know, stripping them of, you know, first and second round draft picks this year and next year, finding them the money. I mean, that's finding the organization, but I mean, what about finding the players? What about suspending players that were involved with it? What about, I mean, there's so many different avenues I think you can go, but I mean, you'd have to go back and do some research to see, you know, who all was involved with it. Who was hitting when people were banging on the trash can, you know, you got to find out who was involved. You know, if there's a whole team, then gosh, you know, you can't suspend the whole team.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the hard thing.
Or what you do is you suspend, you know, four or five guys at a time.
Yeah. I think that's a good idea.
I don't know. I don't know. It's just something where, they're punishing the organization and not punishing the players that were involved.
Right.
And so, you know, that's just my opinion that, you know, you got to punish the players that were involved, not just an organization.
Well, that's it. I mean, there are players that were part of that are no longer part of the organization. So they're getting away. Like, even if there was a punishment, I mean, the team punishment won't affect them. And then there are players that may have been traded to Houston or signed with Houston since this all happened. And now, like, why should they have to suffer? So this is not a situation.
It depends if they were involved with it. You know, if they come over and they said, hey, guys, we have an idea about doing something here to help you know what pitches are coming. And if they get involved with it, you know, it's pretty easy to tell. I mean, I've heard a couple of the videos on the stuff here. I mean, you can definitely hear the banging coming out of the dugout. So you can tell who's involved.
Yeah, and now we have former Toronto Blue Jay pitcher Mike Bolsinger that is putting a lawsuit up against the Houston Astros because the last time he pitched in the major leagues was in Houston. He got rocked in a third of an inning. Now, his numbers weren't... Now, if he had great numbers, Wardo, maybe he stands a chance of actually having success, but his numbers were never really good anyway, and, you know, maybe that was the tipping point for him, but, you know, maybe, just maybe what his lawsuit is going to do is going to motivate others to come out and say yes.
I think there's going to be more guys come out and say, you know, did it derail his career? I mean, I don't know. Like I said, I didn't follow Bolsinger that well, but did it hamper? Absolutely. You know, I mean, you go in there and you're facing a team that has, you know, that's relaying signs. I mean, hey, a third of an inning, yeah, he gets hammered, and all of a sudden he gets sent back down to the minor leagues. Did that hamper his career? Absolutely.
Dwayne, let's say you had a guy on the team like Mike Fiers, who came out and basically blew the lid open on this. As a former professional athlete that spent a lot of years in a clubhouse, what do you do with a character like this? Because for me, as a person sitting on the outside looking in, I'm like, you're damn right. Thank you, Mike Fiers. Thank you for bringing this up because this needs to be blown open. But the guys on the inside are thinking, yo, this is a betrayal. What stays in the clubhouse?
But he's not with Houston anymore, right?
I mean, unless everybody was under a lifetime contract with Houston, you knew this was going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, unless they were never going to leave that organization, you know, you're going to go to another team and you're going to say, hey, when we play Houston, you know, you guys got to be careful of this, you know, stealing signs. And so, I mean, that's, you know, taking care of the team that you're playing for at the moment. And, you know, you said, you know, Mike Fiers comes out and does this, you know, I mean, well, back in the day when, you know, everybody, you know, remembered Jose Canseco's book Juiced.
Mm-hmm.
So, is it really, you know, throwing a wrench in everybody's, you know, you know, take here or whatever? Or is it basically saying, hey, I'm no longer with them, but I got to let my teammates know now.
Exactly.
That if we play them, we got to watch out for this. And that's how it comes, you know, comes out from behind the curtain.
Let me ask you this, Wardo. When you were playing, if your manager at the time or the GM came up with a crazy idea and said, listen, guys, I want you to do this, and you, as a group, you all thought this is ridiculous, do you still do it because you've been ordered to do it?
Well, I don't know. First, you know, let me say, I don't know what Hinch did or the GM did or, you know, what Cora did over in Boston or, you know, Beltran was going to do in New York. I don't know what they're going to do, but, you know, there's guys out there that will look at it and say, I don't want location, you know, if you're trying to steal signs or if a guy's tipping his pitch, I don't want to know that because now I'm anticipating it, but it's not going to be the same exact fastball every time when you throw it. It's not going to be the exact break on a breaking ball when you throw it. It's not going to be the exact same speed on a changeup when you throw it. So some guys would say, no, I don't want it. You know, I don't even want to know what you guys are talking about. And other guys would say, yeah, you know, if he's tipping his pitches, I want to know if it's fast or if it's going to be off speed. And so a manager wouldn't come in there and, you know, I didn't have any manager that came in there and said, hey, you know, we have this, you guys, you know, we're going to do this. No, it wouldn't do that.
Dwayne, who was the guy that you were like, okay, at some point in my career, I'm going to get this guy, not buzz him, not hit him, but just, I want to strike this guy out. Who was it?
Felix Fermin.
I want to know who you want to hit.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do the hit thing too.
I'll tell you what, you know, I had beloved, you know, Jerry Howard come out, you know, and I wanted to strike everybody out, but first and foremost, I wanted them to swing at the first pitch or second pitch. You know, I didn't want to throw a lot of pitches, but if I got a situation where I wanted to strike somebody out, you know, Felix Fermin was the one guy I had Jerry Howarth go back and look to see if I'd ever struck him out. and I hadn't. And so, you know, from then on, I think Jerry may have, you know, spoke a little bit to, you know, guys on the team and, you know, Jimmy Key and all these other guys started, you know, every time we'd play Cleveland or whatever, they'd always say, you know what, I hope you have to face Fermin tonight because you're not going to get him. And it was just, you know, just more needling. And so
That's terrible.
I remember one time, you know, David Wells was pitching and, you know, he went up there and struck out Fermin on three pitches. And Jimmy Key went and got the phone to the bullpen, called down there and said, hey, Sully, put on Wardo. And he goes, hey, Wardo, here you go. And Jimmy goes, hey, Wardo, that's how you strike out for me.
That's so I mean, mean.
More needling.
And then Jerry Howarth would be like, yes, sir, Dwayne. Oh.
Yep, I mean, but it was an ongoing thing once I opened my mouth and asked Jerry to see if I'd ever struck him out. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, that was the one guy that I wanted to strike out that I knew that I had not struck him out.
All right, Wardo. So we started talking about the Hall of Fame thing, and then we kind of diverted because, you know, things go in a crazy direction. So Canada, I mean, this is where you spent the bulk of your career. You come back all the time. When did Canada become your second home? Because, you know, you start your career in Atlanta in 86 and you get traded to Toronto. Yep. Probably didn't have a lot of experience in Canada at that point.
No, I can honestly say that when I first stepped into the clubhouse in Toronto, I felt welcome. And it wasn't only by the teammates. It was welcomed by the front office. It was welcomed by, you know, everybody. I mean, John Eaton, Mr. Hardy, Mr. Witherington, Paul Beeston, you know, these guys were all, you know, if there's anything you need, let us know. If there's anything we can do for you, let us know. I mean, it was open arms and felt so welcome. And then as time went on, you know, started to, you know, gosh, I don't want to play anywhere else. This is the best place in the world to play. And it was because of that warm, welcoming feeling that I got from everybody in the organization from the top down. And that was, that's what kind of solidified it for me. I said, you know what, this is the team I want to play for.
Dwayne, I recently posted a tweet saying the two top sports executives, in my opinion, tied for the number one position in Toronto have been Pat Gillick as well as Masai Ujiri. What was your impressions of Pat Gillick?
You know what, Pat was great about looking out there and seeing talent and then trying to finagle a way to get it over into the Blue Jay organization. You know, he was always attentive on, what else was out there available that would help us get over that hump and get into a World Series. I mean, Pat was constantly working. And to me, it was, you know, getting to know Pat a little bit, you know, and talking to him. You know, Pat was always thinking. He was always, you know, what's on the horizon, you know, thinking ahead, you know, and that to me was very impressive, the fact that, you know, he was able to go out there and just find one guy or two guys, you know, whenever we needed that little help. And then, you know, then he makes, you know, some blockbuster deals, like, you know, getting David Cone, getting, you know, Jack Morris, getting Paul Molitor, getting Dave Winfield. I mean, those things, I mean, just really helped solidify the teams that we had, you know, going in from, you know, 1990, 91, into 92, into 93. So, I mean, Pat was really, really sharp on all that.
Wardo, what was it like as far as adjusting to a new city? I mean, it was a new country, for goodness sake. You know, we got funny looking money and
the whole milk thing, the bags of milk.
Did they have bags of milk back then? They probably did. But I mean,
yes, they did.
It was a different thing for you. Not to mention the weather. You know, playing at Exhibition Stadium in April was probably pretty crappy. What do you remember about those first couple of seasons with the Jays?
Well, the first thing was definitely, it was, you know, a lot cooler than it was in Atlanta.
You think?
Oh yeah. But my biggest thing was that, you know, once you get to a ballpark and you put your batting practice gear on or your game gear on, you know, everything's exactly the same. You know, there's no difference between San Diego, Toronto, New York. It's just baseball, and that makes it easier to make it, you know, adjustments when you go from city to city to city, because you're constantly traveling anyway. You're going to a different city to play a baseball game. And yeah, you got to kind of get to know, even when you're on the road, you get to know, okay, where can I go grab lunch at? Where can I go grab dinner at? And you do the same thing when you're at home in Toronto. You know, where can I go grab lunch at? Where can I go get dinner at? And stuff like that. So, you know, the comparisons are very similar. But it's just now my biggest adjustment was getting to know the American League, because I'd just been so conditioned to knowing the National League. So that was my biggest adjustment, was getting to know all the American League hitters.
Dwayne, is there a different routine when it comes to pitching in cooler temperatures? It sounds obvious, no. But is there a different, like, does the ball react differently? Does the hand react differently? Is there a different routine?
No, I liked it when it was cool because the hitters didn't want to hit.
That's true.
There you go.
Now, is,
you know,
that
if they caught one off the handle, or if they caught one off the end of the bat, you know these hitters would go back there talking about how they, you know, like their hand, you know, they broke their hand or something. And so that was an advantage to the pitcher. You know, I'm sitting there going, you know, because I like to pitch in, I'm going, if these guys don't want to hit off me, like, shoot, I can have a really good April and, you know, maybe a good half, you know, first half of May before it starts warming up. And that to me was, you know, I always looked at it as an advantage.
So then are you saying that the reason why the Jays won the World Series is because of cold temperatures?
I'll take it any way we can take it.
Remember, they kept the bloody roof closed
it's
back
true.
Then.
So it's yeah. the truth. Yeah. Come on, wimps. Come on.
No, but I mean, I'll take the two World Series wins any way we can take them.
Wardo, after the 87 season, you pitched in parts of, you know, a couple of seasons, 86 and 87. Yep. You didn't pitch a heck of a lot. Your numbers weren't good. What happened between 87 and 88? Because you come out in 88, you win 9 games, you've got a 3.30 ERA. I mean, I don't need to tell you the numbers. I mean, you had a phenomenal year. So what happened in 88 that finally allowed you to just click?
Well, I think it was the exact same thing that, you know, was going on in Atlanta, was the inconsistency of pitching. And, you know, I make the team in 86 in Atlanta, and then they, you know, they send me down in order to make a trade, you know, because they're freeing up roster spots. Okay, so I go down to Richmond, then I get traded. I wait in Syracuse before they, you know, decide to clear a roster spot to get me up there. I mean, I think it was just the inconsistency of being one place consistently, and then also getting that baseball on a consistent basis and being able to go out there and get comfortable and get, you know, feel like you're really part of what's going on.
You started one game in 87 with the Jays. Was being a starter something you wanted to do? Did you kind of fall into the reliever role? How did that all kind of transpire?
No, I made the big league roster in Atlanta as a reliever. I started my whole minor league career.
Okay.
And then, you know, I made the big league club as a reliever, and then I get sent down before I got traded. I went back to starting. And then when I got traded over to the Blue Jays, I started. And then I get called up to the Blue Jays, I'm a reliever. I look at it and said, I think they're trying to find a way to give me a lot of innings, get me innings. Because every time I went down, or even in my minor league career, it was always starting, never relieving. So I think they were looking to just get innings, you know, log some innings in. But then, you know, the niche was basically coming out of the bullpen, and I found a home there, and I loved it. And so, you know, when, you know, finally, you know, stuck with the big league club, you know, in Toronto, you know, I loved going out there and being a reliever.
You know, it's funny, in 1990, you had 127 and two-thirds innings out of the bullpen. Wardle, a lot of starters don't even get to those numbers anymore. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's crazy that, you know, I don't know if we'll ever see a 200-inning season anymore.
Well, you have, so many pitchers now on rosters, and, you know, you even have relievers starting games off now. So where's a starter going to find a way, you know, to get to that 200, 250, even 300 innings? You know, you're not gonna ever see that anymore, because now I think the analytics have taken it to, you know, a whole new level of saying, you know, first time through the lineup the starter's good, second time through the lineup he's not as good, third time through the lineup we got to get him out. And so when does that third time through the lineup start? Is it in the fourth inning? Is it in the sixth inning? So I think that's kind of limiting starters from going out there and going that, you know, 7, 8, 9 innings. And plus now everybody's got these good relievers, and you got 8 of them down there, and they're using, you know, 3, 4, 5 of them a night. So I think that's cutting into the starters' innings, that they, hey, if you can just get us through 5, you're good. Or the magic number, 100 pitches. And so that cuts into starters having, you know, more innings each outing.
There is part one with Dwayne Ward. Now, I'm imagining some of you are listening going, why did they ask him about Tony Fernandez? Well, we conducted this conversation with Dwayne Ward about 3 or 4 days before Tony passed. So, you know, we're still looking to get somebody on that played with him. And as soon as we can track someone down, we will definitely get them on. You know, Summer just needs some time to just let all this information process, because it was a pretty sad situation. But
what's the chances of getting the Velociraptor on, Cito?
I'll put in a request for him. Just waiting to hear back from the powers that be to see if they're able to arrange it.
Love that guy.
Yeah, he would be great to get on the show. If you'd like to listen to part two of Dwayne Ward, you can do that on our members page. It will be up on a Wednesday. And of course, all the members know this already. If you're not a member and you're thinking, why do I want to be a member? Like, what's the point? I'm already spending money on this and that and everything. Well, for the price of, you know, maybe one trip to Starbucks a month, you can become a member of Out of the Park. And quite a few things. First of all, you do get the part twos. We have opportunities for you to submit questions when we have guests that we know of that are coming on the program. You'll get an early release of the show. Once we get to a certain threshold of members, we are going to do a prize draw. And we've got some bobbleheads and some cool Blue Jays paraphernalia that we're going to give away. And last but not least, it helps support the show. It costs us money to put this show together each and every week, and the amount of hours and time spent on it. And our wonderful sponsors do their part, and the members we have help. But the more we can get, the more that can help us keep this show going. So we do appreciate all of you that have supported it in one way or the other. Again, if it's not something for you, well, you know, you're still welcome to listen to Out of the Park each and every week for free on all of the platforms. But if you would like to help out, we would appreciate it in any way you can.
Your votes have been tabulated. Time now for Barry's Fair or Foul poll results.
This week's Out of the Park poll is brought to you by Adam Goodman and his team of lawyerly soldiers at aglaw.ca. Davis, what you got coming up with?
My goodness, these guys have been so busy. I have not been able to track them down to record some shows.
You got to get a lawyer to find them.
Oh, I tell you, we have so many great topics that we want to address over the next little while, because, I mean, shoot, we still never talked about the Eddie Belfour arrest and the crazy things that went on with that. Of course, we've got the situation with Reese McGuire we could touch on. There's so many things. The lawsuits, the Houston Astro stuff.
Yeah.
Hopefully over the next few weeks, we can get ourselves back into the studio with the guys. But aglaw.ca, that's where you want to go if you ever need a criminal lawyer.
That's it.
What's the question this week?
The end of the park poll this week was, okay, Blue Jays fans, let's vote on the franchise's best all-time right-handed starter.
Roy Halladay, done. 99.9%?
No, actually, but to the surprise of virtually nobody, Roy Halladay does win this. But okay, Here's your options. Roy Halladay, Pat Henkin, Dave Steeb, others please name. With 78.8%, Roy Halladay takes it.
Okay.
At 20% is Mr. Dave Steeb.
Okay.
And then other please name. We got one comment from this.
Wait, hang on. Any for Pat Henkin?
Zero.
Zero. He won a Cy Young.
Zero.
Dave Steeb did not win a Cy Young.
Zero.
Interesting. Not one vote. How long was this poll up for?
Got 4 days left. Put this up. Yeah, it was up for like 3 days, man.
Wow. Okay. Interesting.
Again.
Did you get write-ins?
Just one.
Roger Clemens?
Nope. The comment is, this isn't really much of a question. Also, who would possibly be the player that the person would choose other than who they're thinking of?
Very right. Well done. Okay. Well, thank you.
Come on, man. It's Roy Halladay.
Thank you for all those who voted. Thank you to Dwayne Ward for joining us. Reminder that you can listen to part two coming up on Wednesday's Members Only program. Matt, I really will make a place for you in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
In the Out of the Park Hall of Fame.
Okay.
Yes. I need someone to cut the grass in the back of it. So you'd be the guy. Matthew, thank you so much for being a part of this show, despite the fact that your singing is atrocious, which is why we do not put a microphone in front of you during any We Ain't Petty shows.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Love you, Matt. Have a great one. And those of you who are listening, thank you so much for making us a part of your week.
You've been listening to Out of the Park with Barry Davis. Thanks for joining us. Get home safely and see you next time.